It's Andy Parks live from the Washington Times on 7:30 a.m., 102.9 FM, WTNT, and I'm joined now by my Washington Times political editor, Stephen Dinan. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Andy.
All right, so I read your story this morning, and I got to admit it brought a tear to my eye. The feds accuse a six-year-old of plagiarism and strip her duck stamp victory.
And made her cry.
Yes, yes.
Made her cry.
And made her cry. I had no idea we had duck stamp police.
Actually, generally we don't. For some reason, and this is why this is so crazy, is for some reason they decided to actually to police the contest this time around and went after this poor 6-year-old girl. You know, I didn't know that much about the duck stamp program and the contest until I began looking into this. But it's for people in what I'm told is called the wildlife art community.
Yeah.
It's a huge thing. This is so every year there's a contest for adults 21 and over, and then for kids whoever has the what's judged the best painting of a duck or ducks that year gets to actually have that painting be the duck stamp. It's worth the actual amount of the contest. For example, the junior duck stamp was worth $5,000 for winning it. But beyond that, though, the story, you actually, as the artist, retain the rights to the painting, not to the stamp and that image, but to the painting itself. And that the marketing rights for that can go for as much as $1 million.
Yep.
So there's big money here. There are a lot of people who care immensely about this. They're collectibles. All that's, the build-up to this year's contest when the 6-year-old girl, Madison Grimm, from South Dakota, won the South Dakota contest and then won the national contest, becoming the youngest ever winner. And apparently a bunch of other parents looked at her painting and said there's no way a 6-year-old did it and complained. And so the Fish and Wildlife Service took her award away.
All right. What led to the determination that they needed to take away, the grand prize from her?
It's a really good question. If you ask the Grimm family, what she did wrong was she was a precocious 6-year-old who was really good. If you ask the Fish and Wildlife Service, there are 3 or 4 different explanations which don't exactly add up. The initial complaints were made because she was a 6-year-old, obviously. The Fish and Wildlife Service began looking into this, never bothered to call the family, made their judgment based on a video that Madison, the 6-year-old, had given to the local newspaper out there where she said that she had done what's called a graphite transfer, and it's basically you spread the back of a piece of paper with graphite, pencil lead, and then you flip it over and you trace the outline of another image on top of that, and that transfers the image to your canvas, and then you then go ahead and you paint the canvas in. Apparently, graphite transfer is perfectly legal. The problem is that you are not supposed to trace or use graphite transfers of published photos or other artists' work. And the question is, what does that mean? Because she took her father, who is a nationally known duck artist himself, she took one of his photos, which had never been published, so it definitely didn't violate that, but she took one of his photos and traced around it. The key question is whether by other artist work, the Fish and Wildlife Service and the rules had meant just, hey, you can't take anybody else, you have to be the person who takes the photo, or whether they meant somebody else's painting. The guy who wrote these rules 10 years ago says clearly Madison met the rules. That he was shocked that his successors at the program took this away from her. The Fish and Wildlife Service, though, said that she traced, and they said they'd had a conversation with the South Dakota person, had a conversation with Madison's parents that had raised red flags. Now, the South Dakota coordinator didn't return any of my messages this week. She sort of went underground, and Madison's parents say, we don't know what conversation they're even talking about. So there are a lot of different explanations coming from Fish and Wildlife Service, and obviously now they realize that none of those explanations really cut it, and they had to undo their decision and give her back the crown.
All right, now, that in and of itself causes a problem because they took the crown away, they gave it to a 17-year-old, if I understand correctly, and then they had to go back to the 17-year-old and say, we made a mistake, we need that back.
Yes. Right, imagine you're the 17-year-old, you've lost to a 6-year-old, then you've beaten the 6-year-old, and the Fish and Wildlife Service, but essentially you made her cry, and then all of a sudden here today, the Fish and Wildlife Service goes back to you and says, actually, sorry, we're once again happy with her painting, so you're now back down to number two. No, the whole thing is just, it was just handled so poorly, and there have been some calls for the duck stamp program chief to be fired, and we'll see if it gets to be that far, but I imagine that it's a black eye on the duck stamps, that's for sure.
Yeah, who knew this stuff even existed, you know?
Oh man, it's been really well. I got to tell you, I sort of when I saw the item cross through my email, I said I'll give that a look, see what's going on. I figured I'd spend a couple 45 minutes, an hour tracking it down and do a short item. But nope, the story just kept going and going and going. And I learned that there was all this background to the duck stamps. You know, I even tried to, as I said, I tried to track down the coordinator from South Dakota, who the national office here sort of tried to pin the blame on and say it was her fault that we disqualified, that she has extra information, and now we'll never know what that information is. So much wonderful stuff. But, you know, boils down to federal agency makes 6-year-old girl cry and then regrets it and has to undo their bad decision.
Yeah, you know, years ago I used to do a lot of target shooting, and as event prizes, and also from time to time they would set up these makeshift museums at some of these shooting sites, and there were a lot of pictures of wildlife, but an incredible number of paintings. And it was very, very good. And I have some pieces at home that I wouldn't get rid of. I know they're probably pretty valuable. So you were right about one thing. This turns into a big business. And if you excel at a young age, I'm sure that could really pay off somewhere down the road.
Yeah, it's worth noting her father, who is also, as I said, a renowned artist, he actually was the youngest winner in the adult category back about a decade or so ago. So, you know, it runs in the family, which is,
yeah.
In this case, that cuts both ways. There's some people who said, well, that clearly means that the father did this painting for her, but it also, of course, means she's homeschooled. She spends a ton of time with her father out in the duck blinds shooting the photos, in his studio, you know, with him painting. So she's clearly immersed in this stuff, which is, you know, by that reckoning, it's not surprising that she's that good at this age.
Mm-hmm. All right, one more thing before I let you run. I saw your brief piece on the CBO issuing estimates more favorable to immigration reform bill. What's that all about?
So the Congressional Budget Office is obviously Congress's chief scorekeeper. They're the ones who say whether a bill costs the federal government money or saves it money. This time around, your listeners may be familiar with this phrase, dynamic scoring, which is basically do you take into account the growth of the economy when you're trying to figure out how something will, whether something will produce a cost or a benefit to the federal government? Generally, CBO does not use dynamic scoring. They think it adds too many uncertainties, so they just calculate straight, you know, for a tax cut. They say, here's how much less revenue is coming into the federal government. Conservatives for a long time have wanted them to say, okay, yeah, there's less revenue coming in immediately, but by taxpayers having more money, they're going ahead and investing it, which produces a bigger economy, which produces more tax revenue in the long run. CBO, you should be counting that. CBO doesn't do that right now. But for the immigration bill, they've decided that because essentially what the immigration bill does is it talks about flows of people, and that's the chief thing it does, they are going to do a sort of dynamic scoring. They're going to go ahead and figure out if you legalize current illegal immigrant workers and you bring in millions of new immigrants over the next decade, they are going to figure out what that would do for the economy and therefore what that would do for federal tax revenue and whatnot. So we will get a dynamic score, and that's actually good news for the backers of the immigration bill, because it's more likely to look promising if you include, most folks do believe that immigration does boost the overall economy. It may not be good for individual workers, but it does boost the overall economy, and therefore there will be some tax revenue benefits to that, to the federal government, and those may offset some of the actual payments to people through benefits or through border security and whatnot.
All right, very good. Thank you very much for your help today. Have a good weekend.
My pleasure, Andy.
Stephen Dinan, Washington Times political editor. It's 4:28, 7:30 a.m., 102.9 FM, WTNT.